at that stage of perfection. And on Krishna's side, when he hears even the first syllable of his name, his mind goes to that person who says his name. It's love. Love is two-sided, it's not one-sided. Very sublime. So the exercise, once again, is what is the subject within this pramana, or the best means of knowing transcendence? What is that subject matter? So the first method was by taking a look at the heart of Shukadeva and the heart of Vyas, so we can then know the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Very reasonable approach. Fantastic exercise to understand that message. And then, midday or late morning, we entered into the next section. So I'm going to now do a little review of the next section. Here's a preview. There's Sanskrit terms, but there's English terms. Microcosm and macrocosm. Macro is big. So, like, to understand the ocean, you can take a drop of ocean water, analyze the ocean water, and understand the makeup of the ocean. That's micro to understand macro. Or conversely, if you understand the nature of the ocean, you'll understand about a drop of the ocean. That's macro to micro. Those are English terms. It's a classic methodology in Sanskrit epistemology of how to understand something. You understand the part, you can understand the whole. You take some gold from a gold mine, you understand the quality of the gold that's in the gold mine, and vice versa. So he begins, this is, it spans from text 50 to 55. So earlier today we covered 50 and 51. So I'm going to do a quick review of 50 and 51. And then we'll attempt to cover 52 and 53. Tomorrow morning we'll do 54 and 55. And then after breakfast we'll finish. Hey. That's the plan anyways. So 50 and 51. Review. The Vyasti and Samasti, the micro and macrocosm approach from the Vedas. What did the Vedas say about the micro? What did the Vedas say about the macro? So, in 50, Jiva Goswami points to the second verse in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 2. And many the devotees that know Srimad Bhagavatam are very familiar with that verse. Dharma prodita kaitavotro paitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Then comes this. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. So, for review purpose, the main focus is going to go to this vastavam vastu. Vastavam vastu. Vastu can mean different things depending upon the context, but here it means reality with a capital R. Absolute reality. The subject matter of this book is absolute reality, distinguished from secondary realities, because there's many secondary realities. Just like in the context of Bhagavad Gita. What's the concluding message of Bhagavad Gita? sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma suchaha. It's an exposition on dharma, what is duty, that's Arjuna's question, and the conclusion is, out of all the varieties of dharma, they are subordinate to one principle. They're meant to bring you to this one thing, and the one thing is taking shelter of Krishna, surrendering to Krishna. All other dharmas are subordinate to that one thing. So in the very same way, right at the very beginning, not at chapter 18, but Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 2, the principal message and all other messages are secondary to the principal one is Vastava Vastu. And this Vastava Vastu means, in English, real substance or absolute reality. And this absolute reality is distinguished from secondary realities or secondary truths. It doesn't mean there's not secondary truths, but those secondary truths are expressed and explained and connected to the primary truth. We'll see that in a moment. And we'll also hear that in, you know, the tomorrow in the concluding section, text 56 to 63. And that is, the message of the Bhagavatam is one thing, the absolute truth. Other truths are expressed. How they connect with the absolute truth is highly emphasized. Some of you remember from the earlier discussion, I didn't put the slide, but Jiva Goswami says, the Bhagavatam teaches this not like the other teachings present, the Vaisheshika teaching. And now, a little correction from this morning. It's Kanada Rishi. I said it incorrectly this morning. Kanada Rishi is the propounder. And it's an atheistic philosophy. It's called, in English terminology, the atomic theory. And in modern sense, it's like, you know, mechanistic science. In mechanistic science, the assertion is there's one thing. There's matter and the laws that govern matter, and there isn't anything else. Everything can be explained in terms of matter and the laws governing matter. That's it, period, or exclamation point. Challenge me. Go ahead. That's modern science. So Vaisheshika does the same thing, drawing from the Vedas, things that speak about, you know, the push and the pull of material laws of nature. And there's no reference to the basis and support of all of that, you know, the position of God, the source and where matter comes from, the laws that govern matter come from. It's just, you know, the delete button is hit. God disappears, and it's just a philosophy of how things are the way they are. So explicitly, the Srimad Bhagavatam speaks of those pushes and pulls of the laws of nature and how they move around and how Krishna's hand is there behind it all. You'll see as we go along. So this was a nice image that several persons had questions about, so I decided to put it on the screen again for review. And the absolute reality. And from the absolute reality, things are expanded from that source of everything. And Parmarupa, this is specific for material creation, according to Sridhar Swami. Okay? So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, the absolute reality, or Vastu, here, is presented added with everything related to him. So as far as material creation is concerned, these are things related to him. Material energy, the living entities, and he also, Krishna, expands himself in various forms, like supersoul within the heart of every living being, for example. And these are his expansions, his Purusha avatars, and so forth. According to Sridhar Swami, this chart above shows Vastu's three expansions in this world. There's the spiritual world. We'll hear something about the spiritual world in just a moment. So that's text 50, summary. Then text 51, Jiva Goswami asks the question, all right, if the subject matter is Vastava Vastu, or the absolute reality, what are some of the features or qualities or aspects of that absolute reality? And he chooses, Jiva Goswami chooses to speak about this very important verse, 1-11, that's a very famous verse, and it's a foundational verse, a Mahavakya verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's where the absolute reality is spoken of in terms of Advaya Gyan. You'll see the verse in just a moment. Advaya Gyan. Advaya means non-dual. And Jnana literally means knowledge. But the Vedic expression is knowledge of something means there's consciousness, so there's absolute consciousness behind absolute knowledge or non-dual knowledge. Now, taking some assistance, a question was asked this morning. Could you explain what this non-dual consciousness means? Remember that question? Well, good news. It's right in the text. It explains what it means. So I'm going to read what the text says for text number 51. For those of you that have books, it's on page 193. In text 1, Jiva Goswami writes, here, quote, consciousness means, quote, that which is purely spiritual. No, so that means a distinction between matter, which isn't conscious, and so it's not spiritual because it's not conscious. But then it's duality. It's hard or soft, wet or dry, hot or cold. It has aspects of duality because it's material, and non-dual, consciousness means that which is purely spiritual. Then the tattva is non-dual in three senses. One, no other independently manifested tattvas exist similar to it or dissimilar. It's one of a kind. It's a set, those of you that know mathematics, it's a set that has only one of a kind. That's in the sense of non-dual. Two, it takes assistance only from his own personal energies, which makes it sound like, well, wait a minute, he's dependent upon his energies. But it's his own personal energies, and number three clarifies this one. None of those energies come into being separately from this ultimate basis of existence. So it's his svashakti, it's his own potencies. He acts through his potencies. So when he does things, he's not depending on some other potency. It's just himself. His own potencies arise from him. He acts through his own potencies, and there isn't another one of him. Non-dual. And consciousness, again, means purely spiritual. Distinct from matter which isn't conscious, and therefore there's aspects of duality. Non-dual consciousness. Okay, can the light go back down again? Jiva Goswami says this Advaya Gyan or Gyanam Advayam is the original perfect consciousness, and it's the underlying unity within all existence. So Krishna exists everywhere. He's the Pratishtha from the language of Bhagavad Gita. Just like when the deities are installed, it's Pran Pratishtha. Pratishtha means the basis and support. Kind of, you know, in a material sense, where I'm seated in a chair. The chair is resting on the floor. The floor is resting on the support beams. The support beams are resting on the earth. And what's the earth resting on? Well, ultimately, everything is resting upon one thing. Krishna is the Pratishtha of all things. He's the basis and support of everything. This Advaya Gyan is the basis and support of everything. The Supreme Conscious Being. That's what Bhagavatam is telling us. That's the absolute truth. That which is the basis and support of everything, that upon which everything rests. And the Vedas are searching for that absolute truth. And all other truths, they're interesting, but they're in relation to the absolute truth, the relative truths. And there's only one absolute truth. And that absolute truth is non-dual consciousness. Here's the verse. Vedanta tat tattva vidas tatvam yajyanam advayam. Then it has this non-dual substance or non-dual knowledge or non-dual consciousness has different features, and they're all same features or different features of the same truth. Brahman Paramatma or Bhagavan. It's a very important verse in the whole of the Bhagavatam, and is responding to a question Jiva Goswami has asked, which is, what's the nature of this absolute truth? Well, it's non-dual consciousness. And it has different manifestations, this non-dual consciousness. And this is the last slide for the summary. He concludes text 51 saying, we have just demonstrated that the Srimad Bhagavatam has, as a book, it has a relationship with the subject of the book, the Supreme Truth. So this is, as you remember, Sambandhi Tattva. Some of you were around for text 29, the very, very beginning of all of this presentation. And we saw this term, Sambandhi Tattva. There was this nice slide with Krishna in the middle. And then Shukadeva Goswami had the fullness of his realization of happiness within, which became then deflected by hearing the pastimes and qualities and form of Ajita. Then he became attached to Ajita. So that then came this Sambandhi Tattva. So there's the realization of Shukadev, and then the subject of the realization of Shukadev. There's a relationship between his heart and what he became attracted to, Ajita, Krishna. So the message here, just to help us like understand what Jiva Goswami is doing, as there was a relationship between the heart of Shukadev and the subject that was within his heart, the Srimad Bhagavatam similarly has, the book has a subject, and the subject is Vastava Vastu, the absolute truth, or Advaya Gyan, the supreme truth. The book has a relationship with its subject. In one sense, it's a technical, you know, why is he doing this? Well, there's a purpose behind why he's doing this. He doesn't have to do it. The purpose is to show the consistency, the transparency, the fidelity between the heart of Shukadev, the heart of Vyas, and Srimad Bhagavatam's message, and then in turn, what Lord Chaitanya taught. It's like, it's completely symmetrical, completely harmonious. They are the same. The subject of the Bhagavatam is Krishna, the Supreme Truth. Okay, so now we're ready for the next two texts, 52 and 53. And I think you're going to I like them very much. The jiva is a small part of the Supreme. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Mamevamsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. The jiva, the living entity, is tiny, fragmental part of the Supreme. So, this is the graduate study of that message, and it's very nice how it's presented in the Bhagavatam. So those of you that were with us earlier, you remember how many times Jiva Goswami again and again referred to this, one of Shankaracharya's favorite messages from the Vedas, Tat Tvam Asi, where his reading of Tat Tvam Asi is your God, or you are Brahman. Tat is you, Tvam is the Supreme, and you are the Supreme. You are that. It's a pronoun, that, but that refers to the Supreme. From Chandogya Upanishad. I mentioned, in Chandogya Upanishad, when the statement is made, it's said seven times. Like, it's really important. So he accepted it's really important and rendered it in a certain way. Jiva Goswami, once again, is saying this oneness is in terms of qualitative oneness. Qualitative oneness like the drop of water from the ocean or the piece of gold from the gold mine or the living entity that's qualitatively one with the Supreme is conscious. Because we heard about the Supreme. He's non-dual consciousness. So that's this macro. Now take a look at the micro, and then it works the other way around. So here's the two Sanskrit terms, vyasti and samasti, or micro to macro. It's a system of understanding things. So Jiva Goswami is constructing this whole section by saying every living entity, every jiva, by studying his own spiritual nature, can then understand something about the nature of the Supreme. Vyasti. So, here's another slide that essentially says the same thing. Understanding the nature of the Supreme by understanding the jiva. Just saying it in reverse order. And that oneness is oneness of substance. If you remember from earlier, the substratum. It's a technical, there's a Sanskrit term, substratum, the makeup of something. So there's similarity in the makeup of the something, whether it's small or big. And that oneness is that oneness of substance. And that's should be the understanding of the Chandogya Upanishad text. The methodology, once again, of Jiva Goswami is, he'll make a statement. Anukarana. Then he's going to give scriptural evidence from the Bhagavatam to support that Anukarana. First, he's going to now give a little explanation of what he means when he says like this. So, he gives this explanation. For example, one who has been kept prisoner in his house since birth, sometimes it's used as in a cave, his whole life. He's never seen light. He wants to know what is the sun. And someone shows there's some rays coming through a small hole in his house. And then the person says, that's the sun. But, you know, the rays coming through the small hole, that's not the sun. It's some rays from the sun. So the implication is, from that small portion of light, the micro, you can understand something about the source, the macro, the great fiery sphere of the sun. So that's this methodology that he's using. Then there's a position of the living entity in relation to the Supreme. That position of the living entity is he's marginal. This is from the Vedas. It's tatastha. We saw it, this image, tata, you know, the lake and the river, or the river and the river bank, and that line where the river meets the river bank. Which is it? Is it river or is it river bank? Neither. It's tata. So the living entity is tata or tatashta shakti. It's marginal potency. And in between, midway between the eternal spiritual world, which way we direct our consciousness will determine what our experience is going to be. So on the one hand, the living entity is one with the Supreme in a general way, one in terms of being conscious, but is also perpetually distinct. Perpetually distinct from the Supreme. There's oneness and difference. This is not a new subject. He's just explaining it a different way. The Achincha Bhedaveda Tattva philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is shown in the realization of Vyas. And this is necessary, this distinction between eternal in the liberated state as well as in the conditioned state, for there to be love in the spiritual realm. It's a place of love. And for love to exist, there has to be two, the lover and beloved. So eternally, it's important, eternally the living entity is individual. And because of being marginal, just turn your attention to the spiritual side or to Krishna, and that spiritual consciousness is what you'll experience. He goes on to say that the living entities, whether in the material world or the spiritual world, Krishna, they're sharing the company of Krishna. In the material world, this image is within the heart of the living entity, there's the soul that animates the body, and within the heart of the soul, or side by side with the individual soul, is the Supreme Soul. He's accompanying us in the material world, and he's accompanying us in the spiritual world. So we're always connected. Just a question of what you're conscious of. So he goes on to say, throughout history, this confidential, secret in the sense of confidential, just like chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, is called most confidential knowledge. It's spoken of and still people don't understand it. It's that kind of confidential. So people rarely realize it. But fortunately, in this age, it's made accessible through this, particularly Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and directly presented and explained so nicely by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the process of taking up connecting with Krishna is very easy. Very easy. Chanting of the holy names. Take Krishna Prasadam. It's not so hard. And hear Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very nice. Very pleasing to the heart and to the ear. Bhavanti Ritkarana Rasayana Kata. It serves like Rasayana. It's like medicine. You feel good instead of ill. So this meaning of oneness is the oneness of loving attitude between the supreme and the tiny souls. Not the merging, but the indistinguishable characteristic of love between one and another. The love, the will of one is the desire of the beloved, and vice versa. That kind of oneness, along with likeness of being conscious. And this is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami is sharing that. It's nice. It's very nice. Someone's changing the lights? Oh, it's just the altar. Okay. Okay. So we're still on text 52. This is Vyasadeva in his trance of meditation. You can see from the effulgence around his head, he's completely illumined in trance of meditation. And he's seeing within his heart something. And he's seeing that the personality of Godhead, Purusham Purnam, is, although both conscious and the living entity is also conscious, they're distinct. They're not absolutely one. Which means then love can exist between the living entity and the supreme. Now, Jiva Goswami, it was still text 52, he's not shy to entertain people that have a different point of view. So this is a little colorful graphic to show little pieces of yellow of different shades and pieces of blue in different shades, and there's yellow and blue. And there's a purpose behind this. There are persons who object. They have a different philosophy or different idea about consciousness. And they say, Buddhists in particular, that consciousness is not something that's eternal. Rather, it's flickering and momentary. So here's how he presents it. One may question, how the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam defines jnana or individual awareness as non-dual and eternal. And the Buddhist argument goes like this. Awareness is only a momentary phenomena, temporarily marked by various forms, sometimes blue objects, sometimes yellow objects, and so on. In Gopi Pranadana's commentary, he refers specifically to this group, Kshanik Vijnanavadi. Kshanik means temporary. It's a Sanskrit term that means the vadi or vada, the doctrine of knowing things only for the moment. So apparently, during Jiva Goswami's time, this group of Buddhists was still prominent in India. So he's not shy to say they have a different view than mine. Let's hear what their view is. Here's their view. Quote, there's only one reality or consciousness which is changing at every moment. And there is no difference between knowledge and the object of knowledge. So it's two things. There's the moment, and that's all there is, that's ever changing. And then not awareness of something, it's just awareness. It's similar to Shankara's idea, or the other way around. Shankara's idea is similar to Buddhism. Then to explain it. Just as in our dreams, the things we see do not exist outside of our consciousness, and also in waking life, distinctions between knowledge and the object of knowledge are not real. That's this group of Buddhisms. For example, we see a blue object, and that we have blue object consciousness. But then the next moment we see a yellow object, and the blue object, blue consciousness, is gone. And now we have yellow consciousness. So how can you say consciousness is eternal? That's the argument. That's the doctrine. Kshanik, or temporary, or momentary. Vijnana Vada. Clear? So, like right now, I just heard the fan turn on, and so consciousness goes to that sound vibration. But, you know, then something changed. Well, I'm supposed to give class, and then back to this. Then I hear some of you chuckling, and so consciousness is momentary from this to that to that to that to that, and that's what Buddhists say. Come on, you can't say consciousness is non-dual and eternal. It's the moment. So be in the moment, right? That's Buddhism. Be in the moment, because that's all there is. In fact, go one step further, and there's actually not even a moment. It's you know, nothingness. The goal of getting to that place of being in the moment is getting into the realm of nothingness, or voidism, nirvana. Whew. We're going to hear, this is the third time, by the way, and we're going to hear it two more times before we're done, about this point of view. Because it was prevalent at the time, and frankly, it's, you know, very popular today, too. So it's good for us to know what this is. And I want to make a repeat a point that I made before. We're not just interested in information. Oh, there's this idea, and there's that idea, and this idea is better than that idea, so I'll take that one off the shelf and put it in my pocket. How much do I owe you? I'll buy six of them. It's not like that. It's that the purpose of the Bhagavatam is transformation of consciousness. That's why when we hear these things, it's not just for sake of information. Please, it's information, but it's far more than information. It's consciousness transformation. You'll see as we go along. Jiva Goswami points it out. The purpose of hearing this is not so we're confident when we hear the Buddhists say there's no such thing of eternal consciousness. All there is the moment that's ever-changing consciousness. There's no eternal consciousness. Then we can say, no, that's not right. Here's the way it is. It's not just for that, for defeating another argument. That's not the purpose of all this. It's transformation. So, Jiva Goswami responds by referring to one verse. He's going to refer to several others, but starts with a verse. It's the last chapter of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13, and then he refers to others from the Upanishads, but I'm just going to stick with the Bhagavatam verse. It's a nice verse, which has these parts. Sarva Vedanta Saram. Sara means essence. The Srimad Bhagavatam is Sarva Vedanta Saram. It's the essence of all the Vedas. I'll read the translation. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is, remember this, absolute truth. And Advaitiyam is derived from Advaita, or non-dual. It's the ultimate reality without a second. Remember this definition of non-dual consciousness? It's one without a second. There's not two of them. There's not two absolute realities or multiple ones. This Bhagavatam's message is that Vastu Advatiyam, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, that's what this says, non-lakshanam, the characteristics of the soul are non-different than the characteristics of the supreme soul, except for the fact that the supreme soul is the source of everything. It's the ultimate reality without a second. So there's characteristic, and then finally, the last line, the goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth, Krishna. So here's a nice image where this is Sutta Goswami. Sutta Goswami is speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to a whole assembly. Pretty interesting. They're all able to hear. And this is Shaunaka Rishi, the eldest amongst those in the audience, and Shaunaka is asking questions on behalf of the audience, and Sutta is speaking. And Sutta has heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva. Shukadeva heard it from his father Vyas. He just, not just, you know, a tape recording or a digital recording, it's not a playback machine. He has realized the subject matter. And he's expressing his realizations of the subject matter to his audience. And again, this is a verse spoken by Sutta, where Sutta says, this Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, so this is this samasti to vyasti, or the macro to the micro, non-different from the spirit soul, it, on the other hand, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. So, this is Jiva Goswami's response to the Buddhist argument that says consciousness is only momentary. As the consciousness of the Supreme is not only momentary, the consciousness of the part and parcel living entity is also not momentary. And then he's going to go through this wonderful exercise of explaining it with yet further references from the Jiva point of view. He's following his methodology. He's very consistent and very honest. So that was text 52. Now we're entering into 53. And down here is the living entity. That's this micro, or the Vyasti perspective. And up here, that's the goal, that's Krishna, or the Samasti perspective. And then there's the path to get from one to the other. So, he's taking the position, or the approach, that says, to discover about the Supreme, we first let us discover about the Jiva. And then we can tell something about the Supreme. By understanding the drop of water in the ocean, we can understand the makeup of the ocean. Let's follow that approach. Now, let's hear what Srimad Bhagavatam has to say about it. And, what's going on here? Yeah. Then he goes back to this Tattvamasi message, because it's a big deal for Shankaracharya. It's said seven times in Chandogya Upanishad, Tattvamasi. So, let us consider the tat, the you, and then we can understand the tvam. If we want to understand tattvamasi, that's how you do it. And let's understand the tat from Srimad Bhagavatam's perspective. And then we'll understand about the tvam. Their nature is similar. They're both conscious and eternal. So now, he goes to this nice verse from the 11th canto, chapter 3, which is a discussion between the Navayogendras and King Nimi. Those of you that read the 11th canto, you know about that. These Navayogendras, they're sons of Lord Rishabhdev. He had 100 sons. 9 of them became perfected beings beyond any worldly consideration. Uttama Adhikari Mahabhagavata Transcendentalists. And they just happened one time by providential arrangement to become present, make themselves present at a time when the king was performing a huge sacrifice. He says, stop the sacrifice. You don't stop sacrifices once you start. He stopped because he saw them and he understood, wow, you're really special people. Who are you? And it's the let me receive you nicely, but part of receiving nicely is let me present transcendental questions because I'm sure you can answer. And one of his the king's transcendental questions was how to understand the living the consciousness of the living entity. So that's the context. And as I mentioned this morning, these three verses are in the handout sheets that you received, text 38, 39, 40. We're not going to go through all of that. We're just going to touch on the topic, but it's a nice topic. It starts off something like Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. The soul is never born, will never die, nor does it grow or decay. Chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. Then, the soul is conscious. The soul is the knower of youth, middle age, and death of the material body. That's also chapter 2. Dehi nosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata tahantara praptir diras tatra namuyati. The soul is the knower. So there's, the Buddhist is saying, there isn't distinction between knower and known. Well, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying different. The Navayogendras, these Uttama Bhagavat personalities are saying the living entity is eternal and the living entity is a knower. And the knower of the changes of the body. Youth, middle age, death. That's the soul, this Atma here, this Atma can then be understood as pure consciousness. And pure consciousness is this word, upalabdhi matram. Upalabdhi matram means pure consciousness. So eternal, the knower of the changes that are going on in the body and outside, and is pure consciousness. And this pure consciousness exists everywhere, at all times, and is never destroyed. That's this phrase here, sarvatra shashvat. Then it uses a little metaphor, just like prana. So those of you that do yoga practice, you know what pranayama is. You consciously move the life air within the body in different ways, different techniques of drilling the respiratory system. It's described sometimes. But this life air, it sustains life. The next verse, text 39, describes a little bit more about it, but the principle is, not only the soul at the time of death goes to the next body and is carried by the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego, but the life air goes with it. Prana goes with the soul. So the Navayogendras are saying, just as the life air that goes into the next body, so also the soul goes into the next body, and there are new designations that you take on when you come in contact with the next body. Same as in chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada explains when you get the body of a dog, you behave like a dog. You bark and you wag your tail and you chew on bones and you do things that dogs do. But that same soul takes the body of a demigod or a king or of something else and they do according to the body. But there's something that's consistent. That's the life air, prana, and the conscious self. That doesn't change. The outside changes. Consciousness becomes molded or impacted or affected by the external, but what's consistent is consciousness. It's something like this. Very simple example. Supposing you have a lamp. You have a light bulb, and inside there's light, and it's whatever you want to call it, white light. But then you can tint the globe around the light, make it pink, or green, or blue, or red, or whatever color you like. And then, you know, change it to another color. The light inside doesn't change. It's the tint of the glass around the light. So there's luminous, and there's the illumination of things around. The luminous doesn't change. The consciousness of the soul doesn't change. The conscious soul doesn't change. It's unchanging. But how it exhibits consciousness changes. That's what this verse and the next verse are going to say. It's in response to the Buddhist view that consciousness is only momentary. It's nice understanding. So, Jiva Goswami goes on. There's this term here, the various material designations. That's this word, vyavicharinam, the transformations. So when a body is born, we have this from the Vedas, there's six things, birth, growth, producing byproducts, dwindling, and death. So stages of transformation of the body. This, various material designations and transformations. Oops. Yeah. So the soul, the conscious, the pure conscious soul, the jiva, is never born. That's the first statement. But the body is born. And because the soul has no birth, then the next transformation of body or sustenance or persistence has nothing to do with the soul. The soul doesn't grow. And because he does not undergo bodily development, the producing of byproducts is also not something the soul does. It's something the body does. Same understanding in Bhagavad Gita. Here's the understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Never consider yourself to be the cause of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the result of action. And never consider yourself causing others to do actions. That's like material life. Understand, however, all this is being carried out by material nature. The verse of Bhagavad Gita, it's a very important verse. Same idea as here. There's changes of the body, and because the body is impacting the conditioned soul's consciousness, like, you know, the pink or yellow or blue or whatever the covering of the globe is, but the light inside doesn't change. The soul doesn't change by that. Consciousness becomes modified, but not the consciousness of the soul. So, the phrase, vyabhicharinam, it means those things that are unsteady, the transformation thing. So you can change in this lifetime from babyhood to boyhood to youth to old age, or you can move to another life form and a demigod human and so on. Those are the changing things, But the spirit soul doesn't change. He has this eternal constitutional position. Unfortunately, he falsely identifies with the changes, or with the body and the changes, the covering of gross and subtle body. And so, unfortunately, as a result of that, he's an illusion. And it's a psychological condition called illusion. Make a very nice course in college. A psychology course. The psychology of illusion. And have them study Tattva Sandarbha. Whew, that would be great. Okay, so this miserable illusory experience of seeing oneself transformed and ultimately annihilated by the laws of nature can be nullified by transcendental knowledge of one's eternal status as the superior energy of the Lord. Well, little qualifier, knowledge alone isn't enough, because knowledge can, Devahuti says this to Lord Kapila, making it really simple. I get the philosophy, I know I'm not the body, but we're so involved with matter, and I feel detachment from knowledge, and then I get attached again. Is it possible to become free from attachment to matter? Oh, Kapila Dev. And he says, yes, it's possible through bhakti. And how is bhakti dissolves false ego? We heard it. So knowledge is incomplete without bhakti. And when you have bhakti, knowledge follows. Like maidservants follow the queen. The queen is bhakti, and she has her maidservants. Knowledge and detachment. Again, this is still text 53. We're almost done. The jiva does not undergo birth, death, growth, or deterioration. This is what the verse says. Since he is the seer of all conditions of changing bodies. The soul doesn't change but sees the changes. That jiva is knowledge alone, or advaya gyan, existing constantly in the body, but endowed with activity by the power of the senses, just as prana is one but moves from body to body. This last sentence is explained in detail, like exhaustive detail, so exhaustive I'm not even going to go into it, in the final section, Adiatmika, Adidaivaka, and Adibaudhika. It's too much, so I'm not even going to go into it. But the senses cannot be empowered to do without the demigods empowering the senses. You could have eyeballs that you can't see, you're blind. Or, you know, legs that don't move because there isn't the empowerment from the demigods. The senses are dependent upon the demigods, and the demigods are dependent upon the Supreme. Anyway, without all that long analysis, the living entity is dependent. Consciousness is there regardless, but conscious of what depends on where we direct our consciousness to, the spiritual or the material side. And that within the material side, there's modes of nature, and we're more or less covered, depending on the modes of nature. Guna. And then there's karma. And then so then you get a body, and then you're moved by the conditioning forces of the body. Unless, the good news is, you can become Krishna conscious. Then you know you have a body, but you don't identify with it. You know you have a mind, but you don't identify with it. You know you have intelligence, but you don't identify with it. It's an energy of Krishna that you use in Krishna's service, and that's nice. So sing for Krishna, and study for Krishna, and work for Krishna, and do whatever you do for Krishna consciousness. And then those energies become spiritualized and they act in a spiritual way. They act for you in a spiritual way. They act upon others in a spiritual way because there's contact with spirit by Krishna consciousness. And how do you awaken that Krishna consciousness? By sound vibration. It's what we're doing. We're trying anyway. We're beginning. So, Jiva Goswami says, we're going to summarize this tomorrow morning, but he says in these verses, 38, 39, and 40, there are four postulates or axioms or arguments that says, here's the quality of the Jiva, and that tells us something about the Supreme. And so far, he's carried us through two of them. Now this one he's pointing out, this is the second one. The second one is, there's a distinction between the seer and the seen. It's right in the verse. And he's pointing it out. So there is consciousness of something. There is knowledge of something that is of a non-dual nature. If you're not in Maya, you can be Krishna conscious and see as Krishna sees. And then there's seeing of things like bodily changes and, you know, it's cold. It's going to get colder and you can be conscious of those things, etc. You know, the lights go off and on and you can be conscious of things. But what is it that what is the seat of consciousness? That's the soul. That's the seer. And then there's the seen, and there's a distinction between them. That's different than what the Buddhist says, because the Buddhist doesn't give acknowledgement to the existence of a soul. Correct? Ask next time you find somebody that says, I'm a Buddhist, ask them two questions. Do you believe in reincarnation? They'll say yes. Then ask them, what is it that's reincarnating? You get a blank. Well, nothingness is reincarnating. Because that reality is nothingness, nirvana. Huh? Come again? It's the conscious soul. And so, from the Vedic perspective, the Bhagavatam perspective, the Bhagavad Gita perspective, this conscious soul is conscious and consciousness. And consciousness can be identified falsely with the changes, but there's the seer and the seen. And now, back to the first one, because he's just now saying this is the second argument. The first one is, there is this distinction, the temporary and the eternal. And the soul is in the category of eternal and conscious. I'm going over time. I would like to finish and then we can recap in the morning and take questions and so forth. So, here we go. There's a living entity. And inside the living entity, there's the soul and there's super soul. So, the individual soul, with the help of super soul, becomes the knower of the known, the seer and the seen, and including knower of phases of time, mentioned in the verse. You know, different stages of body takes time, the changes of time. So the meaning, Jiva Goswami says, the meaning here is that a witness of various material conditions is not himself under those conditions. So that leads to a next nice natural question. What's the unconditioned soul? What's the liberated soul like? Well, the answer is that he is nothing but perception, or in other words, an embodiment of pure consciousness. How is he present? He is everywhere in the body and always going with it. So consciousness spreads through the body. Just like the sun spreads light through the solar system, or a lamp in the room sends light through the room. So the soul that's present within the body sends consciousness throughout the body. That's how the soul exists within the changing of the body. Okay, here's our Buddhist friend again. And he says, well, wait a minute. We see consciousness of something blue fading and consciousness of something yellow arising in its place. Doesn't this mean the consciousness is impermanent? This gentleman is very determined. And Jiva Goswami doesn't mind having dialogue with this very determined fellow. And he gives similar, not exactly the same, but similar response as follows. There's power in the senses. And consciousness is not the senses. Consciousness is distinct. Consciousness is the soul. It's one, and it's permanent and persistent. But by the power of the senses, we sense this diversity of blueness, yellowness, and so on. But consciousness doesn't vary. It's consistent. It's a distinction between the temporary and the permanent. And there is permanence. The conscious self is permanent. From Bhagavad Gita, this drawing. The distinction between, here's the two arguments summed up. The distinction between that which comes and goes, the impermanent, and the point from which it comes and to which it goes. That's the first argument. There's the transcendental nature of the soul. The soul is transcendental and matter is not. They're categorically different. And the second argument is the seer and the seen. It's like a feature of the soul, but the soul sees things or is conscious of things. And the comparison in the verse is prana, which also moves to various bodies, but it doesn't change. It's unchanging. So here's our meditator. We'll see this meditator friend again in a little while. I like this very much. I'm sorry I'm going over time. What Vedanta Sutra is doing is it's taking text from the Upanishads and summarizing them in little codes. So this idea of this whole approach of the Vyasti, the micro to understand the macro, or the living entity to understand the supreme, is indicated in Vedanta Sutra. In the following sutra. Whoops. The following sutra. There's the sutra, which literally means the description of the jiva here has a different object. Well, what does that mean? It's describing a verse from Chandogya Upanishad again. Now watch the image it developed. There's a city, it's called Brahmapura, and within the city there's this lotus. And then within the lotus is sky. Isn't that nice? So now here's the Chandogya Upanishad verse. It says, what happened? In the city of Brahman is a subtle residence in the form of a lotus within the residence of that lotus is a subtle sky. You should find out what is within the subtle sky. So that's the Vyasti should understand himself and that way understand the Supreme. Here's how it's broken down by Jiva Goswami. There's the meditator And now this lotus is going to show in his heart as he's developing concentration in his meditation. And look, there's Super Soul within that lotus. So that's explaining this verse from Chandogya Upanishad, which says, the city of Brahman, or Brahmapura, is the body. No, Kshetra, and then Kshetra-gya. The lotus-shaped residence in that Brahmapura is the heart. And within the heart is the Super Soul, who, there he is metaphorically called the sky that accommodates everything in the universe. Should we do it again? This is described, and it keeps going. It takes you to Krishna Loka. That's how nice it is. We'll do it again tomorrow, because it's late. We'll do it again tomorrow. So, there's the heart of the meditator. And the sky is the Supreme Lord, who, with all his pervading energies, creates and maintains the entire universe. And yet, he enters into that subtle, small space to accompany the living entity, as long as the living entity stays within the material world. In focusing the mind on the Supreme Lord within the heart, and one comes to understand there's countless transcendental qualities, like the quality of compassion and so forth. And as these qualities gradually appear within the meditator's heart, with the progress of his self-realization, the spirit soul in his pure heart can find the original source, that supreme person, Bhagavan, not just Paramatma. Purified of all material desires, he naturally encounters the pure happiness of desiring to satisfy that Supreme. Upon leaving his present body, such a factually liberated soul can at once join the Supreme in his personal kingdom, never to return to material embodiment. When such souls reach the spiritual realm, they attain their eternal spiritual bodies, their previously forgotten true forms. That's breakdown of a Vedanta Sutra, taken from a Chandogya Upanishad verse. And that Chandogya Upanishad verse of Tattvamasi has a whole lot more meaning than I am the Supreme. We've just heard. I love it. It's 9:10. I'm not going to take questions. It's late. You have questions, you can please write them down and we'll discuss tomorrow. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow morning. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.